Welcome to In the Loop Podcast, a podcast that is inspired by the Western culture and the rodeo industry. I am your host, Jordan Joe Hullabaugh, professional rodeo athlete, business owner, married to my best friend, full-time cowgirl, and I am blessed to get to do what I love to do each and every day. My goal is to promote this industry and specifically the sport of breakaway roping. On In the Loop Podcast, we are bringing you behind-the-scenes stories of what real life looks like every day, from cowgirls, cowboys, industry producers, leaders, trailblazers, you name it, we talk about it. We are sharing stories of this Western culture and the lifestyle that they live daily. Join me as we share these stories of the amazing triumphs, trials, and victories, defining moments that we all have along this journey of the amazing way of life that we live. You are officially in the loop. Let's get to it. Okay, guys, so today we are switching it up a little bit, and I have the honor of having the presence of a bareback rider here, also known as Forrest's dad now. You become that when you become a dad, and Paige's husband. So I'm here with Richmond champion. Richmond, thank you for joining us today.
More prominently known as Paige's husband, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah. Isn't that Paige's husband? Yeah.
I guess telling Paige, I was like, yeah. You know, everyone that says hi at Houston, just like, oh, really? That's nice. I was like, yeah, people come up like, hey, how you been? I'm like, oh, good. And they're like, where's Paige? I'm like, oh, she's at home. Like, oh, okay. Well, good to see you. Like,
bye.
Yeah, fine.
Bye, Felicia. We're not talking to you anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah, and now as Forrest grows up and gets more active and starts playing, it's going to become less of Paige and more of where's Forrest? You didn't bring him. Okay, goodbye. You know, you're just going to get shunned.
Yeah, pretty much. I got my call for Calgary the other day, and they're like, well, if you bring Paige and Forrest, you can come and compete. I was like, okay, perfect. Can do. Yeah.
I love it. Did you ever think in your wildest of dreams that you would have that conversation one day?
No. God, it still blows my mind that I'm having the conversation now. It's like, there's still times where it has not sunk in that, like, me and Paige are here. He's ours. We made this. Like, yep. Holy cow. Now it's your turn to change his diaper too. Good job.
So how does that role work between the two of y'all? I mean, I know both of you are very strong-minded and hands-on, but who gets that? Like, I told Paige, I'm going to need some goggles because I heard boys pee on you. Like, talk me through that process.
It's pretty even. It's been pretty even from the get-go. And I think Paige did a really good job of, like, not being that, like, super like I'll do it, like, you know, she kind of let me figure it out along the way too, which is really now at the point now it's like, well, he's got a dirty diaper, well, whoever's holding him, or you know, you got it. It's been nice because it's pretty evenly spread when I'm home, and I try to make up for it because I come home after being gone, it's just been her and him. Like, I'm like, I'm due for some diaper changes and some, you just go run yourself a bath or something.
Like, take your time. Yeah. Take your me time. Yeah, how many times did you, like, how many diapers did you go through the first week trying to figure out, like, what went where?
The diapers, figuring out how the diaper went on was easy. Timing it to where you didn't spend four of them in trying to change one. The timing was hard to figure out for sure. Because you get peed on, you get pooped on, it's an experience and a learning process.
Everybody should get to go through it. Is that what you're saying?
I think you should. And then you get cocky and you're like, oh, I got this. Like, oh, I'll just take him out of his diaper and take him over to the bath. And then Paige doesn't quite have the bath ready and you're sitting there holding him and it's just,
Become the diaper.
And then you become the diaper. You're like, well, I guess I'll take a bath too.
Coming from the 8-time NFR qualifier, he is being the diaper. What a humbling experience.
It happens fast.
It does. It does. Okay, so today we are here. Yeti, brought to you by The Wild, is bringing us this episode. We are both Yeti ambassadors and thoroughly love what we do and get to do and proud to support this brand. Yep, got her, Yeti.
Cheers to that.
Cheers to that, too. Got my water. Drinking my gallon of water today. Talk to me a little bit. You're 8-time NFR qualifier, 1.7 million career earnings PRCA. Oh, by the way, 2014, you were the first million dollar winner of the American. What is it like in the day of Richmond champion bareback rider?
Like on the road?
Yeah.
Well, before a forest, when now I'm going.
We'll
the road
do it before like, forest I and after forest.
I don't know. I feel like it's changed from 2014 to now. You know, back then it was like, it was all fun. I felt like I was constantly on the road, just, you know, staying, you know, stopping off along the way at a buddy's house, you know, whatever it is, you have all the time in the world, and rodeoing is what you're doing and it's your lifestyle. And as I've gotten older, that's changed. You know, you get more responsibilities and things to come home to. So the time out there has been more focused on, oh, I have a family to support. I do want to be the best and stay the best. So I would say now it's more like I go on the road and I'm thinking about what I'm going to eat, where I'm going to sleep. If you get a day off and can play a round of golf, awesome. If not, I'd rather go get a little workout in first, and then just more focused in that, like on the physical side and the mental side of like preparing to ride. It's just gotten so much more competitive, I feel mm-hmm. like, than it used to be, or maybe it's just getting harder because I'm old now. But it's
I think it's both.
Just putting in the effort while I'm home, and then sticking to those, you know, those same things when I get out on the road, because that's a challenge. I'm sure you know what that's like. Just it all kind of it adds a different element when you're not at home with everything you're comfortable with, to kind of maintain those habits. And that's something I really try to do now more than ever, is just kind of really stay in that same zone.
I think that's something I've definitely learned. You know, that was not something I came with. I think that, you know, a lot of people had talked to me about that and the challenges that came with that. And I was like, yeah, okay, whatever. I'll figure it out. You know, I've done this. And then the first year I did that. I just kind of hung out, you know, nothing was really planned or strategic or anything. It was like, I just went with the flow, and wherever I ended up that day is what we did and what we ate. And, you know, there was no strategy in it. And then the older I get too, because I mean, I think you're still older than me, but, I mean, ouch. The older you get, the more I'm very, very focused on my nutrition and my body and my mind and all the things that I think it takes to set me in place to compete with the rest of these girls out there. That maybe I didn't get to utilize back in my teens and all those things. And so, yeah, most definitely it's changed. Before I, you know, just kind of went by the seat, and now I'm like, okay, how am I going to work out, and how am I going to keep all of this going, and how am I going to keep my schedule, and how am I going to keep my business running? Oh, by the way, I got a breakaway rope against the best in the world tonight. So, talk through those seasons. You know, I know, like you said, as you evolved in all those things, but what does it look like now? I mean, fitness is obviously huge for you. Nutrition is huge. Your wife and your son are a big part of your day. How do you manage all of that and then show up to be your best Richmond when you get in the shoe?
Yeah, it's, I feel like I'm definitely in like the learning process of that, of whether, I don't know if I'm putting more pressure on myself now that, you know, like I am a dad, I have, you know, I am kind of on the backside of my career where I really want to capitalize on these last few years, because rodeo is kind of booming right now. Like, it's better than it ever has been in my career as far as opportunity goes. So yeah, it's like a balance of like, that's a lot of talks with Paige about how to keep it tight between the years, just cause you can kind of get off on a loop pretty easy. And not in a good way. It's just more pressure and things like that that I've never felt before, because back then I just did not care. I just rode bareback horses and drank beer and had fun. And there's still some of that, but it's definitely more of like wanting to finish, I guess, just to make the most of the opportunity that's left. And also, I still feel very competitive, and there's so many things I haven't accomplished yet that I would really like to, that I think that's where the diet and the fitness and the mental aspect of it is really, I'm really digging deep into, because it makes me feel more solid when I've checked all those things off the list, when I do go to get on my bareback horse, or when I show up to a rodeo and I know I put in the work before I got there, is feels way better in my mind than coming in hungover and setting my gear back down going, we'll see how this one goes.
You know? I hope this turns out good today. Yeah.
God, I hope he's not too strong. But yeah, that's, I feel like, yeah, it's just evolved. And really in the sport of bareback riding, you look at how, just how good these kids are, and knowing that they can go out and party and show up and still kick my ass, even if I do everything right. You know, it's, yeah, it's just times change. There's different seasons, and I still feel like I can kick their butts. So I'm just going to keep doing what's been working for me.
Yeah. Well, and I'm a huge fan of bareback riding and all the rough stock events, really. I've really gotten to love and get to know all the equine athletes. Like, I'm so excited for y'all. Like, when I see Gunfire walk in there, I'm like, oh yeah, this is going to be a good day. You know what I mean? I feel like I'm like a student of the game there. But it's so cool to see the horses have evolved. You guys have more chances now when you back in the box, or not back in the box, but get in the chute. I don't know what the correct terminology is there. But it's really neat to see that. One of the things I love about you guys is your wife, Paige, is obviously a professional mental coach, I would say. And I'm sure she coaches you too, like you said, between the ears. But in a good way. And I think that one of the things, I did my research, and I have some Yeti moments of truth here. I've questioned Paige as well as your brother, Doug. We'll come to that later. But one of the coolest stories I think Paige told me about you was your journey last year. And last year was huge for you, obviously. You know, Forrest is almost to this world. You're preparing for that. You have been rodeoing your butt off. You've come back from an injury the year prior. You took the whole year off in 2022. You come back 2023 strong. And obviously you have your sights made to make the finals, but your son Forrest is due in September. So what do? You rodeo all year long, as many as you can. And you made the decision that when you were done, you were going to go home and be there for Paige and Forrest. And she said, you know, I really admired how he had the integrity, and he came home and he did that for us. She said most everybody else, including myself, would have probably been out there rodeoing. He was on the bubble. And she said, you know, but he didn't. He made his choice and he stood by it. And he stood by the work he had done and the things he had put into it. And then you ended up getting in there 15th, getting another ticket to your NFR 8 times now. So I'm getting goosebumps talking about it. But I say that to say, my husband says all the time, I wish I could go back and rodeo now, knowing what I know. I feel like I could have done a better job. And I think as we get older and we learn more and we get our principles and all these things. So talk about that mentality that you had last year going through that journey, and what it took in your heart and in your head to make that decision to be like, I'm going to this many rodeos and then I'm going home to get these memories with my family.
Yeah, it was probably the easiest decision I've ever made. Honestly, I just put myself on a clock, and I guess the goal is that I wanted to have the NFR made, and I wanted to have the option of not rodeoing once we had Forrest, because I knew once we had him, I wasn't going to want to go. And anytime I've ever gone to a rodeo I didn't want to be at, it's never gone good. So it didn't make any sense in my mind that I just knew there's no way, you know, I was going to be happier at a rodeo than at home, figuring out how to change a diaper.
How to be the diaper.
Yeah. It was hard in the sense that I pushed way harder in August and July than I ever have. And was like, I had a really good summer. Like, I got more regular season wins last year than I have any other year in my career. Like, was just rolling. I was by myself. My traveling partners were hurt or not rodeoing that hard. And it's just, honestly, just the power of the mind. You put your mind to something and you can go do it. And we had Forrest on the 7th. Left the hospital the 8th. And I dropped Paige off with her mom at home, and I got in the rig and I drove to Puyallup, because the one goal I had for September was the tour finale. Mm-hmm. So you had to compete at Puyallup to be eligible for the tour finale. Because otherwise I was just going to turn out. But looked into that and they're like, no, you got to go. So drop them off at home, jump in the rig, drive straight to Puyallup, ride two the next day, turn around, come home. And Puyallup didn't go any good, but I was set for Sioux Falls. So I was like, okay, there's so much opportunity right there that last week. Like, I haven't entered anything this month. And I think I was sitting like seventh at this point. I felt very comfortable and safe. And as the couple of weeks go by and you start looking at it, you're 11th, you're 13th. Wow, those guys are winning a lot of money out there. I was like, and Paige is like, what, you should be. I was like, Paige, I made the decision. Like, this was my plan. I can't do anything. I didn't enter. So yeah. I can't compete. And I didn't, be honest with you, I don't want to go.
Yeah.
Like, I am fully confident that at Sioux Falls, I will make up whatever is lost. Like, I'm going to the NFR. This is the plan. Like, and if I don't, I'm not going to regret it because I'm not going to miss out on these few weeks here. Like,
yeah.
Turns out I go to Sioux Falls and get the shit smashed out of me. And
I know. I saw that. I was like,
don't win a penny. And I'm like, oh, wow. This really did not go the way I thought it was. And then I guess I flew home early from there and Casey called me when I landed. He was just leaving Mona, Utah. And I was like, how'd it go? And he's like, oh, you got me, I think by $1,000 or something. And it didn't look that way on the standings because Casey, you have, for in order for special event money to count, you have to compete at 40 events. And Casey didn't do that. So whatever money he did have from special events was pulled off the standings. And that bumped me up into 15th. Not the way I would like to qualify, but
right.
I wasn't in a place to be a chooser at that point. And I set my goal and my plan and it worked out.
And I'm, well, I admire that. Yeah, I admire that because I think that that's something as I've been rodeoing and I've struggled with this in years past. It's like the fear of missing out almost. It's like everybody else is doing it. Why am I not doing it? And like you said, sometimes like I haven't wanted to go and I can agree with that. I've went and I'm like, it hasn't went good. And I'm thinking to myself, why am I here? You know, but it's like everybody else was there and this is what everybody else is doing. So that was something I really had to overcome. So I truly admire you saying like, this is the plan. This is my decision and I'm going to trust it. And I mean, no, obviously it's not the ideal way. You're like, hey, I go in there and smash it, but it's like, it was meant to be and it happened. And, or you go another trip to the NFR. So this NFR had to be super special just because of that going in there. So going in there, what mentality did you have? Because it's like, whether you're first or 15th, you could walk away a world champion as much money as you guys get to run at. So what, how did you go in mindset wise at this NFR going in, how you came in?
I honestly was the most like freed up I'd ever been. And in the sense that I didn't have anything to lose. Like the worst case scenario, I leave Las Vegas in the same position I'm in right now, which is last. Like there's really nothing left to do but to go win.
Mm-hmm.
And I honestly feel like I had one of my best NFRs performance wise I've ever had. It was nice in the sense that I didn't have, it's not, you know, I didn't have the target on my back. I wasn't number one. I wasn't, you know, I'm not trying to hang on to anything. I had given up ground or anything like that. So it was honestly, like I just had a really good time competing again. I was just happy to be there. It was fun to be able to make those memories for me and Paige that Forrest was there, and be able to tell him about it when he gets older. And just, I've never left Vegas hungry to go ride bareback horses. And when I got done with 10 rounds, I wanted more. And that I feel like is a cool feeling. Cause that's just not, there's a lot of times I've left there and been like, I'm going to need a couple weeks. That was, you know,
that was rough.
Yeah. Yeah, it was the least I've ever won out there and the best I've ever ridden. And I did what I could do and took care of what I could control. And I had a great time. And I feel like that really boosts the confidence for this year.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a different experience than I've ever had. Normally I'm middle of the pack, or, you know, still kind of in that, like in that top 10, just kind of working forwards, you know, where this one was like, I literally have to, this has to go so perfectly right for like, I'm not counting it out, but it was kind of fun to be in that place of like, who knows?
Yeah.
It could happen. If I just got to show up and do my job, and you never know. So yeah, it was freeing and fun.
Well, and I think that it's something where, to me, as I'm listening to you, it's like it lit the fire again to go and get more of it. And you left there hungry and not satisfied. Like, not satisfied meaning like, yes, you're proud of your performance. Like you said, you did, it was in your control, all the things that you could do, but you weren't satisfied. And when you experience that feeling, if you could bottle that up and sell that, it would be like, you'd be a quadruple billionaire. You'd be lots of, yeah, lots of billionaires. It's an amazing feeling to have that and be able to go into the next season with that mentality of like, yeah, I'm hungry, you know? So 100%. I think that's really cool. And that's something we talk about all the time. And I know Paige has helped me tremendously. Obviously, you know, I think that's probably why you married her, because you wanted a mental coach. Like, is really that fair? I don't know. I'm just kidding. She is an amazing person. How does your relationship with Paige work as far as the mental aspect of it goes? Like, do you and her, how do you work that out? Is this a daily thing? Does she coach you just like she would another client? Or how does that relationship work there when it comes to the mindset of it all?
Yeah. When we first started dating, she was starting to have like these conversations, but I was in kind of a similar position as last year, in the sense that I was like kind of on the bubble and needed to go. And I guess I actually went all that, the whole last month of that season, but it was, she was having these conversations with me and I was like, just get out of my head. Like, I'm fine. I like what I'm doing. We can talk about this later. Get out of there. And like, I think by the end of, I forget what round of the NFR that year, I was standing there on the bucket shoots doing one of the things, or thinking about one of the things she said, where I was just doing it subconscious. And I was like, oh, she got in my head. Like, but it's she like, it works, you know? And I was like, okay. And then like, honestly, ever since then, it's just one, she knows so much of the competition side, because of being an athlete herself. Two, she grew up around the bucking horse industry and rodeo, and grew up sorting bulls. I just can't get over the thought of her out there with a sorting stick and bulls running at her. But she understands at the point that like, I can have a conversation about my ride, not just my mindset, you know, mm-hmm. Or about the horses, or about the judging, or whatever it is. And it has been, yeah, it's, we talked about it this morning. Like, you know, it's just, we talked about it yesterday. Just kind of, yeah, I'm super lucky to have that sort of a, I would say, like, she somehow remains unbiased through it. You know, I guess that's her training as a coach, that like, she kind of brings stuff up and asks questions that makes me think about things differently. And because it's super easy when you're just in your head or been rodeoing by yourself to just get in there, and it's tough to get your way out. And being able to call her, talk to her about whatever it is, whatever the issue is, or whatever I'm thinking about trying to fix, or it's, especially like our sports are so, there's so many variables that you can't control.
Right.
And you can try to carry so much of that, and to have somebody that you can kind of, that can be like, nope, you're being dumb, to stop worrying about that. Like, but can you, we're going to dig you out of here. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's super helpful. And I think has just given me so many tools over the last few years that if I can't talk to her, I still have the tools to like get through and think, yeah.
Yeah.
To put to work. So yeah, super, super lucky to have Paige.
Well, and I love how you guys get to work at this as a partnership almost. You know what I mean? Like, she's right there alongside of you, and you, iron is sharpening iron there. you alongside with her and her alongside with you. And that's something that, you know, even myself and Raymond, Paige has helped us tremendously and given me some of those tools as well. I still hear her in my head. I have a whole book of Paigeanisms, I call it. Yeah. You know, and it's amazing how that sticks with you. And just to have somebody that knows you inside and out and challenges you to rise up, like we said, it's easy to get caught in that hamster wheel in there. So that is super beneficial. But I just think that that's so cool how you guys are doing that as a team, so to speak. And nobody else in the industry does it that way. So I think that that's really cool. But that kind of leads me to my second Yeti moment of truth. This one's from Doug. Yeah, this one's from Doug Champion, Champion Living Fitness, which I'm sure he is your trainer as well, which he's like a Nazi. He's my trainer too.
He's not.
Oh, he's not. You fired your brother?
No, I never hired my brother because he's not going to tell me what to do. I won't have it.
Oh my God. He tells me what to do every day, if that makes you feel better.
Imagine how bad Christmas would be if I had to just listen to him tell me to go to the gym every day and then worry about eating too many sweets in front of him.
So instead, you just eat the sweets without any kind of blame or shame going on there in front of him at Christmas.
And we're brothers and we still love each other. It's perfect.
So Doug shared a story with me that you did not start out as a bareback rider. You started out as a bull rider. So then there is a little catch to this story of how you evolved to be a bareback rider. So walk me through that. So I just can't see you being a bull rider. I mean, I'm one of your biggest fans, bareback rider. I mean, I just can't see you being a bull rider. So talk me through that story.
Doug started riding bareback horses, I think, when he was in high school. I was probably still in junior high. And him and his buddies, like a couple of them were bull riders. Well, I'd been watching the PBR and I was like, I want to ride bulls. So he's like, okay, well, these guys go to a practice pen. We'll go get you on one. So start riding bulls. And God, I was really, really bad at it. And I just kept getting on them, never riding very many of them for very long. For like 3 years.
That makes sense. Wow. 3 years of never doing well. Okay.
I got like hundreds of bulls.
Oh, hundreds. And no successful 8 seconds?
Just a couple. Yeah. But I would call them like at that, like a clock, a broken clock's right twice a day. Like that was, I wasn't right that many times. Like it was bad. but I forget, 2010 maybe. Summer before my senior year of high school, I'd gone to a bull ride and fell off a bull, even like you could probably have ridden this bull.
Oh, well, thank you.
And I remember Doug woke me up the next morning. He's like, hey, I'm going to go get on some practice horses. You want to go? And I was like, yes. And I'm getting on one too. And he's like, yeah, right. I was like, no, I'm doing it. I'm going to try this. And got on one that it was like just clicked immediately and loved it. And all she did was like hop out there in a circle and swish her tail and pee everywhere. She just covered in horse piss, got off on the pickup, man. I was like, yes, this is the best.
I have found my calling.
Yes, this is what I'm going to do. And really from then on, it was like, I feel like me and Doug got on, I don't know how many bucking horses a week for that first year, but so I was 17 and then bought my permit the next year and went pro rodeo and got a scholarship to Tarleton, and it just happened fast.
The rest was
that.
History. I'm sitting here thinking 2010, you win the American in 2014. Like you'd only been riding bareback horses for 4 years and you win $1 million.
Yeah. Crazy.
That's rank.
Yeah. It was nuts.
He says
and now I'm like, why did I see bulls roll in? And I'm like these guys ride bulls really, really good. I'm like, it's just so they poop on everything, they're mean, and like
they run you over.
Like if you, it's just poop on, you can't even go help a bull rider without getting bullshit on you. Like it's just impossible. Like why do you guys do this? I mean, granted, they make a ton of money, and they're very good at it. But
that might explain not why they wear the same pants over and over and over again.
Which we do too, but they just got to go through way more. Like bulls are like, what if they step on you way more often?
Rip your pants.
Lots of ripped pants.
See, I couldn't be a bull rider because, well, one, I'm scared. Two, my balance, meh. And three, my pants are too tight. So I can just imagine the ripped. It wouldn't be good. Wouldn't be worth it. Yeah.
It goes the third round of the NFR. Sometimes really the only danger we have is the clip of the flank strap. Sometimes it'll like ride forward up their belly and it'll end up underneath you. And that metal will rip your pants. And it was the first eliminator pin of last year's NFR. And my butt kind of hurt when I got off, like my butt cheek. I was like, oh gosh, dang, that must have been a flank. But I never like reached back there or anything. And so I was first out. So I stood on the bucking shoes with my ass towards the stands for 14 head of bareback riders. And I come back there and I reach back and I'm like, oh, like I didn't just rip my pants. It cut me through my underwear. So my ass was just hanging out at the Thomas and Mac.
Airing it out for all 17,000 to see.
Yes. Yeah. Like, that's lovely.
Yeah. I mean, maybe you should have went for an underwear sponsor there, you know, Duluth Trading. Something along those lines.
I didn't think cinch underwear could be cut, but apparently they're not flank straps.
They're not made of Tesla.
Yeah.
Maybe that should be a new product investment. Bareback riding underwear made of Tesla.
Exactly.
Well, so my third Yeti moment of truth also comes from Doug. And I did not know that Richmond Champion is a world champion mounted shooter.
National champion.
Oh, excuse me. National.
Junior national
champion. Junior national champion mounted shooter. Like, do you?
2006.
Do you wear that buckle? Do you have a buckle? Do you have a ribbon? I mean.
I don't know where that buckle is, but I do have it. I have a ribbon. Come on. I have lots of ribbons. Blue ones. I won first. I should send you this video. Me and I started mounted shooting. Then I went to the bull riding and still did mounted shooting during that. And then honestly shot all the way up until my freshman year of college. And then rodeo got a little more important and I ended up selling my horse just because I was traveling more and wasn't going to be around. But Casey Field and I in 2015 were invited to a celebrity shoot sponsor / celebrity shootout at a competition in Stephenville, Texas. And I don't know if he just never listened to the fact, because people have said it, you know, it's not like a true secret that I did that. And he just, I don't know, just Casey being Casey just wanted to compete. I was like, we can make a bet. Like, sure. Mm-hmm. Breakfast in the morning, the hotel the night at the airport. Loser buys and breakfast tomorrow at the airport before we fly out. He's like, oh yeah, sounds good. He's like, well, how's it going to be fair? We got to use the same guns. I was like, we'll use the same guns and ride the same horse. How about that? And he's like, okay. And so I was like, I'll go first. He's like, okay. So I go first and I end up setting like the third fastest time of the entire competition, not just the celebrity part. And Casey comes back and he hits a barrel, loses a gun, misses like four. He's like, you're really good at this. I was like, yeah, Casey, I did this for like 5 years. Yeah.
Like, I'm kind of a professional in this too.
He's like, I didn't know that. I was like, yes, Casey.
So he just didn't listen to you all those times. He was completely ignoring you.
Casey never listens to me. It's unbelievable. Well, I think he's done okay for himself without it, but
I will say that one of the girls that went to school for me at West Texas A&M was a national champion mounted shooter. It is very, very tough. It is like the horsemanship is super important. Like I would end up shooting pigeons or something. I mean, I don't even know if I could hit the balloons and all the things that you do. Like it is very detailed sport. I mean, it would be fun to try without cameras. You know, I might do that. Sure.
Yeah. No cell phones.
Nobody is allowed to have a cell phone there. It would not be appropriate. Yeah. But it's pretty cool. So talk a little bit about Casey. I know that he's a good friend of yours. You know, amazing, talented bareback rider, 6-time world champion. We're going to have him on the podcast sometime too. What is it like getting to go down the road with two like-minded competitors like that, you know, encouraging and competing? And one thing I love about y'all is you competed to make each other better. It wasn't against each other. Talk a little bit about that relationship.
Casey's just anything and everything you've heard about Casey Field is true. Like, he's just an incredible human being, an incredible competitor. He packed me around when I was relatively green rodeoing. He's the first guy to go introduce himself, you know, if he doesn't know somebody. And we had some of my best times rodeoing has been with him, and Mason Clements and Jesse Davis and all those guys. When we were, I guess Mason was just kind of coming on whenever we were all together, but everything from the time you wake up to the time you go to bed, whether you're riding that day or not, everything is a competition with Casey Field, like everything. So like to the point that we'd get call, like maybe we didn't get a preference somewhere and we'd be at, you know, lunch or something. And I'd get a call. Well, Casey was next on the list to get the call if I say no. And it'd be like, okay, but you're not just going to take that. Like, you're not just going to take the spot. We're going to like rock, paper, scissors for it. Right.
Like, you're like, no, I'm going to take the spot.
Yeah. No, let's rock, paper, scissors. I can beat you. Yeah. I'm going to beat you here. And then I'm going to go win this rodeo. And then you rock, paper, scissors, Casey. And it turns out that he beats you and he goes and wins the rodeo. But it did. Like, it made you, makes you so much, I don't know what, it just makes you so much better at just everything. Cause it was always that way. Like, yeah, you're going to lose some, but you're going to win more, you know, but it's like it, his mindset, that's one thing. Like physically, yeah, he's in his riding style. Like, if you just take all of that out of it, that guy's mind is just steel. Like, he just, there's just something different about him. And it was so fun to be a part of and to travel with that. Cause that, like, that mentality is contagious.
Yeah. Like, I agree.
It just is, like we were talking about the tools you got from Paige and what I have, like, I think back to things like in my riding or more like directed towards like my aggressiveness or things like that towards this actual sport of bareback riding. And like fundamentally, I just think back on all the tools that I gathered when I traveled with him, along with what I've learned on my own. But it's, yeah, that's a, that was a really, really thankful for that opportunity in my career.
What are, I'm always like, I'm a junkie for mindset things. And I think that one of the biggest things that people misconceive is like, there's not a one step fix all. There's not an instant solution. There's not like a check this box and voila, you're going to win. But what are two applicable things that you've got from work, you know, riding with Casey, rodeoing with Casey, that you think really helped change your mindset that you could share with our audience?
I think on the, you can always be faster, which that actually might cross over pretty well on the time side too.
Yeah.
But like for us, it's just like that, getting that start and being that, like the aggressor and being that, basically taking that first punch. That was one when I was starting. He's like, I'd show him a video, like they'd mark me like 87 points. I'd win the room. Like, Casey, what do you think? And he'd be like, faster. I'm like, God, this guy's a jerk. But
you're like, hey, so, get out and check the tire and then I'm going to take off.
That's what I get for, it's what I get for asking him, but it was, he's right. You know, it was like that. You can always be faster. It's like that. I don't know.
Never satisfied.
Yeah, exactly. You're just constantly, no matter what they mark you, like if he could see that I could be faster, then I can damn sure be faster. And really the other one is just be kind to people. Because, you know, I've watched him. I mean, the first time I really met him, I was my first year at the short round of Denver, and he just walked right up to me in the locker room, shook my hand and asked how it was going. And like he genuinely wants to get to know you as a person. And that's something that I've tried to do. Cause I would say I'm more shy than I lead on in that sense, but it's something that I work on just because, like, yeah, you can walk up and, like, everyone loves Casey Field because everyone knows him, and he knows everyone and remembers. Like, you ever walk into a rodeo with that guy, you pack a snack because you're going to talk to every single person on the way into the locker room, you know? He just always makes time for people, and that's something I try to do.
Yeah. I love that too. You know, I think that something that if you look back on, you know, we always talk about the camaraderie and, you know, the friendships made, but it's because you gave somebody a little bit of your time to whether it was listening, talking, going through whatever it was at that time. You know, after it's all said and done, one thing I've realized as a competitor is only you really remembers how good you did or bad you did, unless they see it on the Cowboy Channel. Or, you know, and then they'll call you and tell you one way or the other whether you did good or bad. But honestly, after it's all said and done, you're the only one who remembers how you did, really. Yeah. And so it's really important how you treat people and how they feel. And that is something I love about rodeo. But let's follow up my fourth truth, and then I'll surrender. I've got two more things for you. Fourth truth. Okay. Paige says, which I'm like, is this because you love Richmond or what? Paige says that you did the cold plunge first time for like 8 or 9 minutes, easy peasy. Mm-hmm. Is she lying?
No. Ugh. I don't know. I feel like everyone has a different threshold for pain or cold water pain, like that numbness. I don't know.
Is that because you get thrapped every time you nod your head? I mean, how did you do that?
No, because like I've watched, like, Caleb Bennett puts an ice bag on his wrist and he's got to go like walk pace in the hallway to get through his 10 minutes or 5 minutes, whatever it is. But like, I just, in physically, I don't know why, maybe I'm twisted, but I really do enjoy it. Like, the it's still a bit of a fight sometimes. I'm like, okay, 4 more minutes, that is a long time. Maybe I should just do 4, like, and not 8. But I'm always happy when I get done with
it. 8.
I don't know. Yeah. It's like I said, depends on the day. But yeah, it does. The first time it was just like, I don't know how long I'm supposed to be in here. And I guess I'm going to sit in here as long as I can.
So do you get a trough and put it now, because I'm not competitive at all, but I'm going to try this. So do you get a trough and you sit it outside, you fill it up, put ice in it? I mean, what's your cold plunge look like?
Yeah, that one was just one outside. But yeah, like, I would usually, like this winter, I just had it outside and I would keep a fishing net and then something to break the ice with. So you break ice and then just get the big chunks out so you don't cut yourself, and then set a timer. I would recommend putting music or something on.
What kind of music?
That does help. But also dunk your, like, get all the way in. So, like, I go get in immediately and dunk my head. And then it's way easier than if you don't. Yeah.
So I did the 75 hard, and then I did the phase one with a group of girls. And the phase one was all the things in 75 hard plus a 5-minute cold shower. But it also wasn't like, it was a cold shower, but it wasn't, I doubt it was as cold as an ice plunge, because we're in Texas and it doesn't get that cold here. But I will say, like, every morning I would dread it. And then I would be like, I tell myself, you're going to be so thankful you did this. And as soon as I got in there and like got through the initial shock, I was like, dang right. Like, I'm thankful I did this. So, but I haven't done a cold plunge yet. So now that I'm not competitive, I'm going to be your 8 minutes.
Okay. Do it. Yeah. I want to hear about it. I don't know. I feel like it's like, oh, do I go to the gym? I don't want to go to the gym. Like, you're always so happy you did, like, no matter what. That it's just become part of the routine that I really enjoy. And it's not, I usually do like 3 or 4 days a week, not every day. Because one thing I've noticed is it does, like, it kind of kicks your butt a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like you get done, like, after you kind of get through the, like, the feeling really good, you're like, whew, I could use a nap. Like, I am tired. But probably the biggest difference I've seen is just, like, training wise that, like, there's a reason people have been doing ice baths forever, you know, especially on the athletic side, is that just the recovery aspect of it. You really do feel so much better the next day when you get back in the gym. So I challenge you to 8 minutes in 1 second of cold plunging.
accepted. I will send you a video of my watch timer.
Perfect.
Yeah, you're welcome. Raymond will not do it because he is a sissy. We'll just let you know. Yeah, so it's been so much fun talking all things Yeti with you today. Yeti Moments of Truth. What does 2024 look like for you this year, Richmond?
A full, healthy season of rodeoing. Yeah, just continually trying to better myself and reach new highs and be a good dad and a good husband and keep learning.
And a good diaper. Don't forget. A good diaper.
I am a really good diaper. That's actually, I think, yeah, it's a brand new shirt that I put on for this. You can't, it's not too bad now.
I can see it a little bit right there.
A little forest residue.
Five
seconds while Paige was doing something before I came in here. And
Forest is with you.
That's Hooey. This drool rag is brought to you by Hooey.
Teflon underwear brought to you by Cinch. Drool rag brought to you by Hooey. All things Western here on In the Loop podcast. Well, Richmond, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate you for taking the time. We'll see you down the road.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.